influential people. People who didn't like me very much. It didn't really matter that they were horrid if what I said got out. In fact, it would have been worse, because they were horrid. I would have been ruined. And I would have ruined my entire family along with me.
What happened then? I assume it was his idea to publish.
Penelope nodded. Yes. He made all the arrangements with the printer, who in turn found the boys to deliver. And it was his idea to give it away for free for the first 2 weeks. He said we needed to addict the ton.
I was out of the country when the column began, Colin said. But I remember my mother and sisters telling me all about it.
People grumbled when the newsboys demanded payment after 2 weeks for free, Penelope said. But they all paid.
A bright idea on the part of your solicitor, Colin murmured.
Yes, he was quite savvy.
He picked up on her use of the past tense. Was. She nodded sadly.
He passed on a few years ago, but he knew he was ill, and so before he died he asked me if I wanted to continue. I suppose I could have stopped then, but I had nothing else in my life, and certainly no marriage prospects.
She looked up quickly.
I don't mean to... That is to say...
His lips curved into a self-deprecating smile. You may scold me all you wish for not having proposed years ago. Penelope returned his smile with one of her own. Was it any wonder she loved this man? But, he said rather firmly, only if you finish the story.
Right, she said, forcing her mind back to the matter at hand. After Mr...
She looked up hesitantly.
I'm not certain I should say his name.
Colin knew she was torn between her love and trust for him and her loyalty to a man who had, in all probability, been a father to her once her own had departed this earth. It's all right, he said softly. He's gone. His name doesn't matter. She let out a soft breath.
Thank you, she said, chewing on her lower lip. It's not that I don't trust you.
I know, he said reassuringly, squeezing her fingers with his. If you want to tell me later, that's fine. And if you don't, that will be fine as well. She nodded, her lips tight at the corners, in that strained expression people get when they are trying hard not to cry.
After he died, I worked directly with the publisher. We set up a system for delivery of the columns, and the payments continued the way they had always been made, into a discreet account in my name.
Colin sucked in his breath as he thought about how much money she must have made over the years. But how could she have spent it without incurring suspicion? Did you make any withdrawals? He asked.
She nodded. After I'd been working about 4 years, my great-aunt passed away and left her estate to my mother. My father's solicitor wrote the will. She didn't have very much, so he took my money and pretended it was hers.
Penelope's face brightened slightly, as she shook her head in bewilderment.
My mother was surprised. She'd never dreamed Aunt Georgette had been so wealthy. She smiled for months. I've never seen anything like it.
It was very kind of you, Colin said. Penelope shrugged.
It was the only way I could actually use my money.
But you gave it to your mother, he pointed out.
She's my mother, she said, as if that ought to explain everything. She supported me. It all trickled down.
He wanted to say more, but he didn't. Portia Featherington was Penelope's mother, and if Penelope wanted to love her, he wasn't going to stop her.
Since then, Penelope said, I haven't touched it. Well, not for myself. I've given some money to charities.
Her face took on a wry expression.
Anonymously.
He didn't say anything for a moment. Just took the time to think about everything she had done in the last decade, all on her own, all in secret. If you want the money now, he finally said, you should use it. No one will question your suddenly having more funds. You're a Bridgerton after all. He shrugged modestly. It's well known that Anthony settled ample livings upon all of his brothers.
I wouldn't even know what to do with it all.
Buy something new, he suggested. Didn't all women like to shop? She looked at him with an odd, almost inscrutable expression.
I'm not sure you understand how much money I have,
she said, hedgingly.
I don't think I could spend it all.
Put it aside for our children, then, he said. I've been fortunate that my father and brother saw fit to provide for me, but not all younger sons are so lucky.
And daughters, Penelope reminded him. Our daughters should have money of their own, separate from their dowries.
Colin had to smile. Such arrangements were rare, but trust Penelope to insist upon it. Whatever you wish, he said fondly. She smiled and sighed, settling back against the pillows. Her fingers idly danced across the skin on the back of his hand, but her eyes were far away, and he doubted she was even aware of her movements.
I have a confession to make,
she said, her voice quiet and even just a touch shy. He looked at her doubtfully. Bigger than Whistledown?
Different.
What is it? She dragged her eyes off of the random spot on the wall she seemed to be focused upon and gave him her full attention.
I've been feeling a bit...
She chewed on her lip as she paused, searching for the right words.
Impatient with you lately. No, that's not right,
she said.
Disappointed, really.
An odd feeling began to prickle in his chest. Disappointed how? He asked carefully. Her shoulders gave a little shrug.
You seemed so upset with me. About Whistledown.
I already told you that was because...
No, please,
she said, placing a gently restraining hand on his chest.
Please let me finish. I told you I thought it was because you were ashamed of me, and I tried to ignore it, but it hurts so much, really. I thought I knew who you were, and I couldn't believe that person would think himself so far above me that he would feel such shame at my achievements.
He stared at her silently, waiting for her to continue.
But the funny thing is...
She turned to him with a wise smile.
The funny thing is that it wasn't because you were ashamed at all. It was all because you wanted something like that for your own. Something like Whistledown. It seems silly now, but I was so worried because you weren't the perfect man of my dreams.
No one is perfect, he said quietly.
I know.
She leaned over and planted an impulsive kiss on his cheek.
You're the imperfect man of my heart, and that's even better. I'd always thought you infallible, that your life was charmed, that you had no worries or fears or unfulfilled dreams. But that wasn't really fair of me.
I was never ashamed of you, Penelope, he whispered. Never. They sat in companionable silence for a few moments. And then Penelope said,
Do you remember when I asked you if we might take a belated honeymoon trip?
He nodded.
Why don't we use some of my Whistledown money for that?
I will pay for the honeymoon trip.
Fine, she said with a lofty expression. You may take it out of your quarterly allowance.
He stared at her in shock, then hooted with laughter.
You're going to give me pin money?
He asked, unable to control the grin that spread across his face.
Pen money,
she corrected.
So you can work on your journals.
Pen money, he mused. I like that. She smiled and placed her hand on his.
I like you.
He squeezed her fingers.
I like you too.
Penelope sighed as she settled her head on his shoulder.
Is life supposed to be this wonderful?
I think so, he murmured. I really do. Chapter 21. 1 week later, Penelope was sitting at the desk in her drawing room, reading Colin's journals and making notes on a separate piece of paper whenever she had a question or comment. He had asked her to help him edit his writing, a task she found thrilling. She was, of course, overjoyed that he had entrusted this critical job to her. It meant he trusted her judgment, thought she was smart and clever, felt that she could take what he had written and make it even better. But there was more to her happiness than that. She'd needed a project, something to do. In the first days after giving up Whistledown, she'd reveled in her newfound free time. It was like having a holiday for the first time in 10 years. She'd read like mad, all those novels and books she'd purchased but never gotten around to reading. And she'd taken long walks, ridden her horse in the park, sat in the small courtyard behind her house on Mount Street, enjoying the fine spring weather and tipping her face up toward the sun for a minute or so at a time, long enough to bask in the warmth, but not so long as to turn her cheeks brown. Then, of course, the wedding and its myriad details had consumed all of her time, so she really hadn't had much opportunity to realise what might be missing in her life. When she had been doing the column, the actual writing of it hadn't taken too terribly long, but she always had to be on the alert, watching and listening. And when she wasn't writing the column, she was thinking about writing the column, or desperately trying to remember some clever turn of phrase until she could get home and jot it down. It had been mentally engaging, and she hadn't realised how much she'd missed having her mind challenged until now, when she'd finally been given the opportunity again. She was jotting down a question about Colin's description of a Tuscan villa on page 143 in volume 2 of his journals when the butler knocked discreetly on the open door to alert her to his presence. Penelope smiled sheepishly. She tended to absorb herself entirely in her work, and Dunwoodie had learned through trial and error that if he wanted to get her attention, he had to make some noise.
"A visitor to see you, Mrs. Bridgerton," he said.
Penelope looked up with a smile. It was probably one of her sisters, or maybe one of the Bridgerton siblings.
"Really? Who is it?"
He stepped forward and handed her a card. Penelope looked down and gasped, first in shock and then in misery. Engraved in classic, stately black, on a creamy white background, were two simple words. Lady Tombly.
Cressida Tombly? Why on earth would she come calling?
Penelope began to feel uneasy. Cressida would never call unless it was for some unpleasant purpose. Cressida never did anything unless it was for an unpleasant purpose.
"Would you like me to turn her away?"
Dunwoodie asked. "No," Penelope said with a sigh. She wasn't a coward, and Cressida Tombly wasn't going to turn her into one.
"I'll see her. Just give me a moment to put my papers away. But..."
Dunwoodie stopped in his tracks and cocked his head slightly to the side, waiting for her to go on.
"Oh, never mind,"
Penelope muttered.
"Are you certain, Mrs. Bridgerton?"
"Yes. No,"
she groaned. She was dithering, and it was one more transgression to add to Cressida's already long list of them. She was turning Penelope into a stammering fool.
"What I mean is, if she's still here after 10 minutes, would you devise some sort of emergency that requires my presence? My immediate presence?"
"I believe that can be arranged."
"Excellent, Dunwoodie,"
Penelope said with a weak smile. It was, perhaps, the easy way out, but she didn't trust herself to be able to find the perfect point in the conversation to insist that Cressida leave, and the last thing she wanted was to be trapped in the drawing-room with her all afternoon. The butler nodded and left, and Penelope shuffled her papers into a neat stack, closing Colin's journal and setting it on top so that the breeze from the open window couldn't blow the papers off the desk. She stood and walked over to the sofa, sitting down in the centre, hoping that she looked relaxed and composed. As if a visit from Cressida Tombly could ever be called relaxing. A moment later, Cressida arrived, stepping through the open doorway as Dunwoodie intoned her name. As always, she looked beautiful, every golden hair on her head in its perfect place. Her skin was flawless, her eyes sparkled, her clothing was of the latest style, and her reticule matched her attire to perfection.
"Cressida," Penelope said, "how surprising to see you."
Surprising being the most polite adjective she could come up with under the circumstances. Cressida's lips curved into a mysterious, almost feline smile.
"I'm sure it is," she murmured. "Won't you sit down?" Penelope asked, mostly because she had to.
She'd spent a lifetime being polite. It was difficult to stop now. She motioned to a nearby chair. the most uncomfortable one in the room. Cressida sat on the edge of the chair, and if she found it less than pleasing, Penelope could not tell from her mien. Her posture was elegant, her smile never faltered, and she looked as cool and composed as anyone had a right to be.
"I'm sure you're wondering why I'm here," Cressida said.
There seemed little reason to deny it, so Penelope nodded. And then, abruptly, Cressida asked,
"How are you finding married life?"
Penelope blinked.
"I beg your pardon?" "It must be an amazing change of pace,"
Cressida said. "Yes," Penelope said carefully, "but a welcome one."
Yes. You must have a dreadful amount of free time now. I'm sure you don't know what to do with yourself."
A prickling feeling began to spread along Penelope's skin. "I don't understand your meaning," she said.
"Don't you?"
When it became apparent that Cressida required an answer, Penelope replied, somewhat testily,
"No, I don't."
Cressida was silent for a moment, but her cat with cream expression spoke volumes. She glanced about the room until her eyes fell on the writing desk where Penelope had so recently been sitting.
"What are these papers?"
she inquired. Penelope's eyes flew to the papers on the desk, stacked neatly under Colin's journal. There was no way that Cressida could have known that they were anything special. Penelope had already been seated on the sofa when Cressida had entered the room.
"I fail to see how my personal papers could be of your concern," she said. "Oh, do not take offence," Cressida said,
with a little tinkle of laughter that Penelope found rather frightening.
"I was merely making polite conversation, inquiring about your interests."
"I see," Penelope said, trying to fill the ensuing silence.
"I'm very observant,"
Cressida said. Penelope raised her brows in question.
"In fact, my keen powers of observation are quite well known among the very best circles of society."
"I must not be a link in those impressive circles, then,"
Penelope murmured. Cressida, however, was far too involved in her own speech to acknowledge Penelope's.
"It's why,"
she said in a thoughtful tone of voice,
"I thought I might be able to convince the Ton that I was really Lady Whistledown."
Penelope's heart thundered in her chest.
"Then you admit that you're not?"
she asked carefully.
"Oh, I think you know I'm not."
Penelope's throat began to close. Somehow, she'd never know how, she managed to keep her composure and say,
"I beg your pardon."
Cressida smiled, but she managed to take that happy expression and turn it into something sly and cruel.
"When I came up with this ruse, I thought, I can't lose. Either I convince everyone I'm Lady Whistledown, or they won't believe me. And I look very cunning when I say that I was just pretending to be Lady Whistledown in order to ferret out the true culprit."
Penelope held very silent, very still.
"But it didn't quite play out the way I had planned. Lady Whistledown turned out to be far more devious and mean-spirited than I would have guessed."
Cressida's eyes narrowed, then narrowed some more, until her face, normally so lovely, took on a sinister air.
"Her last little column turned me into a laughing-stock."
Penelope said nothing, barely daring to breathe.
"And then,"
Cressida continued, her voice dropping into lower registers,
"and then you had the effrontery to insult me in front of the entire Ton."
Penelope breathed a tiny sigh of relief. Maybe Cressida didn't know her secret. Maybe this was all about Penelope's public insult, when she'd accused Cressida of lying, and she'd said, dear God, what had she said? Something terribly cruel, she was sure, but certainly well-deserved.
"I might have been able to tolerate the insult if it had come from someone else,"
Cressida continued.
"But from someone such as you, well, that could not go unanswered."
"You should think twice before insulting me in my own home," Penelope said in a low voice. And then she added, even though she hated to hide behind her husband's name, "I am a Bridgerton now. I carry the weight of their protection." Penelope's warning made no dent in the satisfied mask that moulded Cressida's beautiful face.
"I think you had better listen to what I have to say before you make threats."
Penelope knew she had to listen. It was better to know what Cressida knew than to close her eyes and pretend all was well. "Go on," she said, her voice deliberately curt.
"You made a critical mistake,"
Cressida said, pointing her index finger at Penelope and wagging it back and forth in short, tick-tocky motions.
"It didn't occur to you that I never forget an insult, did it?"
"What are you trying to say, Cressida?" Penelope had wanted her words to seem strong and forceful, but they came out as a whisper. Cressida stood and walked slowly away from Penelope, her hips swaying slightly as she moved, the motion almost like a swagger.
"Let me see if I can remember your exact words," she said, tapping one finger against her cheek. "Oh, no, no, don't remind me. I'm sure it will come to me. Oh, yes, I recall now."
She turned around to face Penelope.
"I believe you said you'd always liked Lady Whistledown. And then, and to give you credit, it was an evocative, memorable turn of phrase. You said that it would break your heart if she turned out to be someone like Lady Tombly."
Cressida smiled.
"Which would be me."
Penelope's mouth went dry. Her fingers shook, and her skin turned to ice. Because while she hadn't remembered exactly what she'd said in her insult to Cressida, she did remember what she'd written in that last, final column, the one which had been mistakenly distributed at her engagement ball. The one which Cressida was now slapping down onto the table in front of her. "Ladies and gentlemen, this author is not Lady Cressida Tombly. She is nothing more than a scheming impostor, and it would break my heart to see my years of hard work attributed to one such as her." Penelope stared down at the words, even though she knew each one by heart. "What do you mean?" she asked, even though she knew her attempt to pretend that she didn't know exactly what Cressida meant was futile.
"You're smarter than that, Penelope Featherington,"
Cressida said.
"You know I know."
Penelope kept staring at the single, incriminating sheet of paper, unable to tear her eyes from those fateful words. "It would break my heart. Break my heart. Break my heart. Break my..."
"Nothing to say?"
Cressida asked, and even though Penelope could not see her face, she felt her hard, supercilious smile.
"No one will believe you," Penelope whispered.
"I can barely believe it myself,"
Cressida said with a harsh laugh.
"You, of all people! But apparently you had hidden depths and were a bit more clever than you let on. Clever enough,"
she added with noticeable emphasis,
"to know that once I light the spark of this particular piece of gossip, the news will spread like wildfire."
Penelope's mind whirled in dizzying, unpleasant circles. Oh, God, what was she going to tell Colin? How would she tell him? She knew she had to, but where would she find the words?
"No one will believe it at first,"
Cressida continued.
"You were right about that. But then they'll start to think, and slowly but surely the pieces of the puzzle will fall into place. Someone will remember that they said something to you that ended up in a column, or that you were at a particular house party, or that they'd seen Eloise Bridgerton snooping about. And doesn't everyone know that the two of you tell each other everything?"
"What do you want?" Penelope asked, her voice low and haunted, as she finally lifted her head to face her enemy.
"Ah, now, there's the question I've been waiting for."
Cressida clasped her hands together behind her back and began to pace.
"I've
been giving the matter a great deal of thought. In fact, I put off coming here to see you for almost a full week until I could decide upon the matter.
Penelope swallowed, uncomfortable with the notion that Cressida had known her deepest secret for nearly a week, and she'd been blithely living her life, unaware that the sky was about to come crashing down.
I knew from the outset, of course,
Cressida said,
that I wanted money, but the question was how much. Your husband is a Bridgerton, of course, and so he has ample funds. But then again, he's a younger son, and not as plump in the pocket as the Viscount.
How much, Cressida?
Penelope ground out. She knew that Cressida was drawing this out just to torture her, and she held little hope that she would actually name a figure before she was good and ready.
Then I realized,
Cressida continued, ignoring Penelope's question and proving her point,
that you must be quite wealthy, too, unless you're an utter fool, and considering your success at hiding your little secret for so long, I've revised my initial opinion of you, so I don't think you are. You'd have to have made a fortune after writing the column for all those years, and from all outward appearances.
She gave a scornful glance to Penelope's afternoon dress.
You haven't been spending it. So I can only deduce that it is all sitting in a discreet little bank account somewhere, just waiting for a withdrawal.
How much, Cressida?
£10,000.
Penelope gasped.
You're mad. No,
Cressida smiled.
Just very, very clever.
I don't have £10,000.
I think you're lying.
I can assure you I'm not.
And she wasn't. The last time Penelope had checked her account balance, she'd had £8,246, although she supposed that with interest it had grown by a few pounds since then. It was an enormous sum of money, to be sure, enough to keep any reasonable person happy for several lifetimes. But it wasn't 10,000, and it wasn't anything she wished to hand over to Cressida Tombley. Cressida smiled serenely.
I'm sure you'll figure out what to do. Between your savings and your husband's money, £10,000 is a paltry sum.
£10,000 is never a paltry sum.
How long will you need to gather your funds?
Cressida asked, completely ignoring Penelope's outburst.
A day? 2 days?
2 days?
Penelope echoed, gaping.
I couldn't do it in 2 weeks. Aha! So then you do have the money.
I don't.
1 week,
Cressida said, her voice turning sharp.
I want the money in 1 week.
I won't give it to you,
Penelope whispered, more for her own benefit than Cressida's.
You will,
Cressida replied confidently.
If you don't, I'll ruin you.
Mrs. Bridgerton.
Penelope looked up to see Dunwoodie standing in the doorway.
There is an urgent matter which requires your attention, he said. Immediately.
Just as well,
Cressida said, walking toward the door.
I'm done here.
She walked through the doorway, then turned around once she reached the hall, so that Penelope was forced to look at her, perfectly framed in the portal.
I'll hear from you soon,
she inquired, her voice mild and innocent, as if she were talking about nothing more weighty than an invitation to a party, or perhaps the agenda for a charity meeting. Penelope gave her a little nod, just to be rid of her. But it didn't matter. The front door may have thunked shut, and Cressida might be gone, but Penelope's troubles weren't going anywhere. Chapter 22. 3 hours later, Penelope was still in the drawing room, still sitting on the sofa, still staring into space, still trying to figure out how she was going to solve her problems. Correction, problem, singular. She had only one problem, but for the size of it, she might as well have had 1,000. She wasn't an aggressive person, and she couldn't remember the last time she had a violent thought, but at that moment She could have gladly wrung Cressida Tombley's neck. She watched the door with a morose sense of fatalism, waiting for her husband to come home, knowing that each ticking second brought her closer to her moment of truth, when she would have to confess everything to him. He wouldn't say, "I told you so." He would never say such a thing. But he would be thinking it. It never occurred to her, not even for a minute, that she might keep this from him. Cressida's threats weren't the sort of thing one hid from one's husband, and besides, she was going to need his help. She wasn't certain what she needed to do, but whatever it was, she didn't know how to do it alone. But there was one thing she knew for sure. She didn't want to pay Cressida. There was no way Cressida would be satisfied with £10,000, not when she thought she could get more. If Penelope capitulated now, she'd be handing money over to Cressida for the rest of her life, which meant that in 1 week's time, Cressida Tombley would tell all the world that Penelope Featherington Bridgerton was the infamous Lady Whistledown. Penelope reckoned she had two choices. She could lie and call Cressida a fool and hope that everyone believed her, or she could try to find some way to twist Cressida's revelation to her advantage. But for the life of her, she didn't know how. "Penelope!" Colin's voice. She wanted to fling herself into his arms, and at the same time, she could barely bring herself to turn around. "Penelope!" He sounded concerned now, his footsteps increasing in speed as he crossed the room. "Dunwoodie said that Cressida was here." He sat next to her and touched her cheek. She turned and saw his face. The corners of his eyes crinkled with worry, his lips slightly parted as they murmured her name. And that was when she finally allowed herself to cry. Funny how she could hold herself together, keep it all inside until she saw him. But now that he was here, all she could do was bury her face in the warmth of his chest, snuggle closer as his arms wrapped around her. As if somehow he could make all her problems go away by his presence alone. "Penelope," he asked, his voice soft and worried. "What happened? What's wrong?" Penelope just shook her head, the motion having to suffice until she could think of the words, summon the courage, stop the tears. "What did she do to you?"
"Oh, Colin," she said, somehow summoning the energy to pull herself far enough back so that she could see his face. "She knows."
His skin went white.
"How?"
Penelope sniffled, wiping her nose with the back of her hand.
"It's my fault," she whispered.
He handed her a handkerchief without ever taking his eyes off of her face.
"It's not your fault,"
he said sharply. Her lips slid into a sad smile. She knew that his harsh tone was meant for Cressida, but she deserved it as well.
"No," she said, her voice laced with resignation. "It is. It happened exactly as you said it would. I wasn't paying attention to what I wrote. I slipped up."
"What did you do?" he asked. She told him everything, starting with Cressida's entrance and ending with her demands for money. She confessed that her poor choice of words was going to be her ruin. But wasn't it ironic? Because it really did feel like her heart was breaking. But the whole time she spoke, she felt him slipping away. He was listening to her, but he wasn't there with her. His eyes took on a strange, faraway look, and yet they were narrowed, intense. He was plotting something. She was sure of it. It terrified her and thrilled her. Whatever he was planning, whatever he was thinking, it was all for her. She hated that it had been her stupidity that had forced him into this dilemma, but she couldn't stem the tingle of excitement that swept across her skin as she watched him.
"Colin?"
she asked hesitantly. She'd been done speaking for a full minute, and still he hadn't said anything.
"I'll take care of everything," he said. "I don't want you to worry about a thing."
"I assure you that that is impossible,"
she said with shaking voice.
"I take my wedding vows quite seriously,"
he replied, his tone almost frighteningly even.
"I believe I promised to honour and keep you.
Let me help you, she said impulsively. Together we can solve this.
One corner of his mouth lifted into a hint of a smile. Have you a solution? She shook her head.
No. I've been thinking all day, and I don't know. Although
what? He asked, his brows rising. Her lips parted, then pursed, then parted again as she said,
What if I enlisted the aid of Lady Danbury?
You're planning to ask her to pay off Cressida?
No,
she said, even though the tone of his voice told her that his had not been a serious question.
I'm going to ask her to be me.
I beg your pardon?
Everyone thinks she's Lady Whistledown anyway, Penelope explained. At least quite a lot of people do. If she were to make an announcement...
Cressida would refute it instantly, Colin interrupted.
Who would believe Cressida over Lady Danbury?
Penelope turned to him with wide, earnest eyes.
I wouldn't dare cross Lady Danbury in any matter. If she were to say she was Lady Whistledown, I'd probably believe her myself.
What makes you think you can convince Lady Danbury to lie for you?
Well, Penelope replied, chewing on her lower lip, she likes me.
She likes you? Colin echoed.
She does, rather. I think she might like to help me, especially since she detests Cressida almost as much as I do.
You think her fondness for you will lead her to lie to the entire ton? He asked doubtfully. She sagged in her seat.
It's worth asking.
He stood, his movements abrupt, and walked to the window. Promise me you won't go to her.
But
promise me.
I promise, she said. But
no buts, he said. If we need to, we'll contact Lady Danbury, but not until I have a chance to think of something else. He raked his hand through his hair. There must be something else.
We have a week,
she said softly, but she didn't find her words reassuring, and it was difficult to imagine that Colin did either. He turned around, his about face so precise he might have been in the military. I'll be back, he said, heading for the door.
But where are you going?
Penelope cried out, jumping to her feet. I have to think, he said, pausing with his hand on the doorknob.
You can't think here with me, she whispered.
His face softened, and he crossed back to her side. He murmured her name, tenderly taking her face in his hands. I love you, he said, his voice low and fervent. I love you with everything I am, everything I've been and everything I hope to be.
Colin,
I love you with my past, and I love you for my future. He bent forward and kissed her once, softly on the lips. I love you for the children we'll have, and for the years we'll have together. I love you for every one of my smiles, and even more, for every one of your smiles. Penelope sagged against the back of a nearby chair. I love you, he repeated. You know that, don't you? She nodded, closing her eyes as her cheeks rubbed against his hands. I have things to do, he said, and I won't be able to concentrate if I'm thinking about you, worrying if you're crying, wondering if you're hurt.
I'm fine, she whispered. I'm fine now that I've told you.
I will make this right, he vowed. I just need you to trust me. She opened her eyes.
With my life.
He smiled, and suddenly she knew that his words were true. Everything would be all right. Maybe not today, and maybe not tomorrow, but soon. Tragedy couldn't coexist in a world with one of Colin's smiles. I don't think it will come to that, he said fondly, giving her cheek one affectionate stroke before returning his arms to his sides. He walked back to the door, turning the moment his hand touched the knob. Don't forget about my sister's party tonight. Penelope let out a short groan.
Do we have to? The last thing I want to do is go out in public.
We have to, Colin said. Daphne doesn't host balls very often, and she'd be crushed if we did not attend.
I know,
Penelope said with a sigh.
I know,
I knew it even as I complained. I'm sorry.
He smiled wryly. It's all right. You're entitled to a bit of a bad mood today.
Yes,
she said, trying to return the smile.
I am, aren't I?
I'll be back later, he promised.
Where are you?
She started to ask, then caught herself. He obviously didn't want questions just then, even from her. But to her surprise, he answered,
To see my brother.
Anthony?
Yes.
She nodded encouragingly, murmuring,
Go, I will be fine.
The Bridgertons had always found strength in other Bridgertons. If Colin felt he needed his brother's counsel, then he should go without delay.
Don't forget to prepare for Daphne's ball,
he reminded her. She gave him a half-hearted salute and watched as he left the room. Then she moved to the window to watch him walk by. But he never appeared. He must have headed straight out the back to the mews. She sighed, allowing her bottom to rest against the windowsill for support. She hadn't realised just how much she'd wanted to catch one last glimpse of him. She wished she knew what he was planning. She wished she could be sure he even had a plan. But at the same time, she felt oddly at ease. Colin would make this right. He'd said he would, and he never lied. She knew that her idea to enlist the aid of Lady Danbury wasn't a perfect solution, but unless Colin came up with a better idea, what else could they do? For now, she would try to push it all from her mind. She was so weary and so very tired, and right now what she needed was to close her eyes and think of nothing but the green of her husband's eyes, the shining light of his smile. Tomorrow. Tomorrow she would help Colin solve their problems. Today she would rest. She would take a nap and pray for sleep and try to figure out how she would face all of society this evening, knowing that Cressida would be there, watching and waiting for her to make a false move. One would think that after nearly a dozen years of pretending she was nothing more than the wallflowerish Penelope Featherington, she'd be used to playing roles and hiding her true self. But that was when her secret had been safe. Everything was different now. Penelope curled up on the sofa and closed her eyes. Everything was different now. But that didn't mean that it had to be worse, did it? Everything would be fine. It would. It had to. Didn't it? Colin was starting to regret his decision to take a carriage over to his brother's house. He'd wanted to walk. The vigorous use of his legs and feet and muscles seemed the only socially acceptable outlet for his fury. But he'd recognised that time was of the essence, and even with traffic, a carriage could convey him to Mayfair faster than could his own 2 feet. But now the walls seemed too close and the air too thick. And God damn it, was that an overturned milk wagon blocking the street? Colin poked his head out the door, hanging out of the carriage even as they were still rolling to a halt. God above, he muttered, taking in the scene. Broken glass littered the street. Milk was flowing everywhere, and he couldn't tell who was screeching louder. The horses, which were still tangled in the reins, or the ladies on the pavement, whose dresses had been completely splattered with milk. Colin jumped down from his carriage, intending to help clear the scene, but it quickly became apparent that Oxford Street would be a snarl for at least an hour, with or without his help. He checked to make sure that the milk wagon horses were being properly cared for, informed his driver that he would be continuing on foot, and took off walking. He stared defiantly in the faces of each person he passed, perversely enjoying the way they averted their gaze when faced with his obvious hostility. He almost wished one of them would make a comment, just so he could have someone to lash out at. It didn't matter that the only person he really wanted to throttle was Cressida Toombley. By this point, anyone would have made a fine target. His anger was making him unbalanced, unreasonable, unlike himself. He still wasn't certain what had happened to him when Penelope had told him of Cressida's threats. This was more than anger, greater than fury. This was physical. It coursed through his veins,
pulsed beneath his skin. He wanted to hit someone. He wanted to kick things, put his fist through a wall. He'd been furious when Penelope had published her last column. In fact, he'd thought he couldn't possibly experience a greater anger. He was wrong. Or perhaps it was just that this was a different sort of anger. Someone was trying to hurt the one person he loved above all others. How could he tolerate that? How could he allow it to happen? The answer was simple. He couldn't. He had to stop this. He had to do something. After so many years of ambling through life, laughing at the antics of others, it was time to take action himself. He looked up, somewhat surprised that he was already at Bridgerton House. Funny how it no longer seemed like home. He'd grown up here, but now it was so obviously his brother's house. Home was in Bloomsbury. Home was with Penelope. Home was anywhere with Penelope. Colin? He turned around. Anthony was on the pavement, obviously returning from an errand or appointment. Anthony nodded toward the door.
Were you planning to knock?
Colin looked blankly at his brother, just then realizing that he'd been standing perfectly still on the steps for God only knew how long.
Colin?
Anthony asked again, his brow furrowing with concern.
I need your help,
Colin said. It was all he needed to say. Penelope was already dressed for the ball when her maid brought in a note from Colin.
Dunwoodie got it from the messenger,
the maid explained, before bobbing a quick curtsy and leaving Penelope to read the note in privacy. Penelope slid her gloved finger under the envelope flap and nudged it open, pulling out the single sheet of paper on which she saw the fine, neat handwriting that had become so familiar to her since she'd started editing Colin's journals.
I will make my own way over to the ball this evening. Please proceed to number 5. Mother, Eloise and Hyacinth are waiting to accompany you to Hastings House. All my love, Colin.
For someone who wrote so well in his journals, he wasn't much of a correspondent, Penelope thought with a wry smile. She stood, smoothing out the fine silk of her skirts. She'd chosen a dress of her favourite colour, sage green, in hopes that it might lend her courage. Her mother had always said that when a woman looked good, she felt good, and she rather thought her mother was right. Heaven knows, she'd spent a good 8 years of her life feeling rather bad in the dresses her mother had insisted looked good. Her hair had been dressed in a loosely upswept fashion that flattered her face, and her maid had even combed something through the strands. Penelope was afraid to ask what, that seemed to bring out the red highlights. Red hair wasn't very fashionable, of course, but Colin had once said he liked the way the candlelight made her hair more colourful, so Penelope had decided that this was one case upon which she and fashion would have to disagree. By the time she made her way downstairs, her carriage was waiting for her, and the driver had already been instructed to take her to number 5. Colin had clearly taken care of everything. Penelope wasn't sure why this surprised her. He wasn't the sort of man who forgot details. But he was preoccupied today. It seemed odd that he would have taken the time to send instructions to the staff about her delivery to his mother's house, when she could have conveyed the order just as well herself. He had to be planning something. But what? Was he going to intercept Cressida Tombley and have her shipped off to a penal colony? No, too melodramatic. Maybe he'd found a secret about her and was planning to cross-blackmail her. Silence for silence. Penelope nodded approvingly as her carriage rolled along Oxford Street. That had to be the answer. It was just like Colin to come up with something so diabolically fitting and clever. But what could he possibly have unearthed about Cressida in so short a time? In all her years as Lady Whistledown, she'd never heard even a whisper of anything truly scandalous attached to Cressida's name. Cressida was mean, and Cressida was petty, but she'd never stepped outside the rules of society.
The only truly daring thing she'd ever done was claim to be Lady Whistledown. The carriage turned south into Mayfair, and a few minutes later they came to a stop in front of number 5. Eloise must have been watching at the window, because she virtually flew down the steps and would have crashed into the carriage had the driver not stepped down at that precise moment and blocked her path. Eloise jumped from foot to foot as she waited for the driver to open the carriage door. In fact, she looked so impatient that Penelope was surprised she didn't rush past him and wrench the door open herself. Finally, ignoring the driver's offer of help, she climbed into the carriage, nearly tripping on her skirts and tumbling to the floor in the process. As soon as she'd righted herself, she looked both ways, her face pursed into an extremely furtive expression, and yanked the door shut, nearly taking off the driver's nose in the process.
"What?"
Eloise demanded.
"Is going on?"
Penelope just stared at her.
"I could ask the same of you." "You could? Why?" "Because you nearly knocked over the carriage in your haste to climb inside." "Oh."
Eloise sniffed dismissively.
"You have only yourself to blame for that."
"Me?"
"Yes, you. I want to know what's going on, and I need to know tonight."
Penelope was quite certain that Colin would not have told his sister about Cressida's blackmail demands, not unless his plan was to have Eloise harangue Cressida to death.
"I don't know what you mean," she said. "You have to know what I mean,"
Eloise insisted, glancing back up toward the house. The front door was opening.
"Oh, bother! Mother and Hyacinth are coming already. Tell me."
"Tell you what?
Why Colin sent us that abominably cryptic note, instructing us to stick to you like glue all evening."
"He did?"
"Yes. And may I point out that he underlined the word glue?"
"And here I thought the emphasis was yours,"
Penelope said dryly. Eloise scowled.
"Penelope, this is not the time to poke fun at me."
"When is the time?"
"Penelope!"
"Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Do you know what the note was about?"
Penelope shook her head, which wasn't a complete lie, she told herself. She really didn't know what Colin had planned for this evening. Just then the door opened, and Hyacinth bounded in.
"Penelope!"
she said with great enthusiasm.
"What is going on?" "She doesn't know,"
Eloise said. Hyacinth shot her sister an annoyed look.
"It figures you'd sneak out here early."
Violet poked her head in.
"Are they quarrelling?"
she asked Penelope.
"Just a little,"
Penelope replied. Violet sat next to Hyacinth across from Penelope and Eloise.
"Very well. It's not as if I could stop them anyway. But do tell, what did Colin mean when he instructed us to stick to you like glue?"
"I'm sure I don't know."
Violet's eyes narrowed, as if assessing Penelope's honesty. He was quite emphatic. He underlined the word glue, you know.
"I know," Penelope replied, just as Eloise said.
"I told her." "He underlined it twice,"
Hyacinth added.
"If his ink had been any darker, I'm sure I would have had to go out and slaughter a horse myself."
"Hyacinth!"
Violet exclaimed. Hyacinth just shrugged.
"It's all very intriguing."
"Actually,"
Penelope said, eager to change the subject, or at least to twist it slightly,
"what I'm wondering is, what will Colin wear?"
That got everyone's attention.
"He left home in his afternoon clothes," Penelope explained, "and didn't come back. I can't imagine your sister would accept anything less than full evening kit for her ball."
"He'll have borrowed something from Antony,"
Eloise said dismissively.
"They're precisely the same size. Same as Gregory, actually. Only Benedict is different."
2 inches taller,"
Hyacinth said. Penelope nodded, feigning interest as she glanced out the window. They'd just slowed down, the driver presumably trying to navigate through the crush of carriages that were choking Grosvenor Square.
"How many people are expected tonight?"
Penelope asked. "I believe 500 were invited," Violet replied. "Daphne doesn't host parties very often,
but what she lacks in frequency, she makes up for in size.
I'll say,
Hyacinth muttered.
I hate crowds. I'm not going to be able to get a decent breath tonight.
I'm lucky you were my last, Violet told her with weary affection. I'd not have had the energy for any more after you, I'm sure.
Pity I wasn't first, then,
Hyacinth said with a cheeky smile.
Think of all the attention I could have had, not to mention the fortune.
You're already quite the heiress as it is, Violet said.
And you always manage to find your way to the centre of attention,
Eloise teased. Hyacinth just grinned. Did you know, Violet said, turning to Penelope, that all of my children are going to be in attendance tonight? I can't remember the last time we were all together.
What about your birthday party?
Eloise asked. Violet shook her head. Gregory wasn't able to get away from university.
We're not expected to line up according to height and sing a festive tune, are we?
Hyacinth asked, only half joking.
I can see us now, the singing Bridgertons. We'd make a fortune on the stage.
You're in a punchy mood tonight, Penelope said to her. Hyacinth shrugged.
Just getting myself ready for my upcoming transformation into glue. It seems to require a certain mental preparedness.
A gluey frame of mind? Penelope inquired mildly.
Precisely.
We must get her married off soon, Eloise said to her mother.
You first,
Hyacinth shot back.
I'm working on it,
Eloise said cryptically.
What?
The word's volume was rather amplified by the fact that it exploded from three mouths at once.
That's all I'm going to say,
Eloise said, and in such a tone of voice that they all knew she meant it.
I will get to the bottom of this,
Hyacinth assured her mother and Penelope. I'm sure you will, Violet replied. Penelope turned to Eloise and said,
You don't stand a chance.
Eloise just lifted her chin in the air and looked out the window.
We're here,
she announced. The four ladies waited until the driver had opened the door, and then one by one they alighted. My goodness, Violet said approvingly. Daphne has truly outdone herself. It was difficult not to stop and look. All of Hastings' house was ablaze with light. Every window had been adorned with candles, and outdoor sconces held torches, as did a fleet of footmen who were greeting the carriages.
It's too bad Lady Whistledown isn't here,
Hyacinth said, her voice for once losing its cheeky edge.
She would have loved this. Maybe she is here,
Eloise said.
In fact, she probably is.
Did Daphne invite Cressida Tombley? Violet asked.
I'm sure she did, Eloise said. Not that I think she's Lady Whistledown.
I don't think anyone thinks that any longer, Violet replied, as she lifted her foot onto the first step. Come along, girls. Our night awaits. Hyacinth stepped forward to accompany her mother, while Eloise fell into line beside Penelope.
There's magic in the air,
Eloise said, looking around as if she'd never seen a London ball before.
Do you feel it?
Penelope just looked at her, afraid that if she opened her mouth, she'd blurt out all of her secrets. Eloise was right. There was something strange and electric about the night, a crackling sort of energy, the kind one felt just before a thunderstorm.
It almost feels like a turning point, Eloise mused, as if one's life could change completely, all in one night.
What are you saying, Eloise? Penelope asked, alarmed by the look in her friend's eyes.
Nothing,
Eloise said with a shrug, but a mysterious smile remained upon her lips as she hooked her arm through Penelope's and murmured,
Let's be off. The night awaits.
Chapter 23 Penelope had been to Hastings' house a number of times, both for formal parties and more casual visits, but never had she seen the stately old building look more lovely or more magical than it did that evening. She and the Bridgerton ladies were among the first to arrive.
Lady Bridgerton had always said that it was rude for family members even to consider fashionably late entrances. It was nice to be so early, though. Penelope was actually able to see the decorations without having to push through crushing crowds. Daphne had decided not to use a theme for her ball, unlike the Egyptian ball last week and the Grecian one the week before. Rather, she had decorated the house with the same simple elegance with which she lived her everyday life. Hundreds of candles adorned the walls and tables, flickering in the night, reflecting off the enormous chandeliers that hung from the ceilings. The windows were swathed in a shimmery, silvery fabric, the sort of thing one might imagine a fairy to wear. Even the servants had changed their livery. Penelope knew that the Hastings servants usually wore red and gold, but tonight their red was adorned with silver. It could almost make a woman feel like a princess in a fairy tale.
"I wonder how much this cost,"
Hyacinth said, eyes wide. "Hyacinth!" Violet scolded, batting her daughter on the arm. "You know that it's impolite to ask about such things."
"I didn't ask," Hyacinth pointed out. "I wondered. And besides, it's only Daphne."
"Your sister is the Duchess of Hastings," Violet said, "and as such, she has certain responsibilities to her station. You would do well to remember that fact."
"But wouldn't you agree?"
Hyacinth said, linking her arm around her mother's and giving her hand a little squeeze.
"That it's more important simply to remember that she's my sister."
"She has you there,"
Eloise said with a smile. Violet sighed. "Hyacinth, I declare that you will be the death of me."
"No, I won't,"
Hyacinth replied.
"Gregory will."
Penelope found herself stifling a laugh.
"I don't see Colin here yet,"
Eloise said, craning her neck.
"No."
Penelope scanned the room.
"That's surprising. Did he tell you that he would be here before you arrived?"
"No," Penelope replied, "but for some reason I rather thought he would." Violet patted her arm. "I'm sure he'll be here soon, Penelope, and then we'll all know what this big secret is that has him insisting we remain by your side. Not," she added hastily, her eyes widening with alarm, "that we view it as any sort of chore. You know we adore your company." Penelope gave her a reassuring smile.
"I know. The feeling is mutual."
There were only a few people ahead of them in the receiving line, so it wasn't very long before they were able to greet Daphne and her husband Simon.
"What?"
Daphne asked without preamble, just as soon as she was sure her other guests were out of earshot.
"Is going on with Colin?"
Since the question appeared to be directed mostly at her, Penelope felt compelled to say,
"I don't know." "Did he send you a note as well?"
Eloise asked. Daphne nodded.
"Yes, we're to keep an eye on her," he said.
"It could be worse,"
Hyacinth said.
"We're to stick to her like glue."
She leaned forward.
"He underlined glue."
"And here I thought I wasn't a chore," Penelope quipped.
"Oh, you're not,"
Hyacinth said breezily.
"But there's something rather enjoyable about the word glue. Slides off the tongue rather pleasingly, don't you think? Glue. Glue."
"Is it me?"
Eloise asked.
"Or has she gone mad in the head?"
Hyacinth ignored her with a shrug.
"Not to mention the drama of it. I feel as if I'm a part of some grand espionage plot."
"Espionage," Violet groaned. "Heaven help us all."
Daphne leaned forward with great drama.
"Well, he told us..."
"It's not a competition, wife," Simon put in. She shot him an annoyed look before turning back to her mother and sisters and saying,
"He told us to make sure she stays away from Lady Danbury."
"Lady Danbury?"
they all exclaimed, except for Penelope, who had a very good idea why Colin might want her to stay away from the elderly Countess. He must have come up with something better than her plan to convince Lady Danbury to lie and tell everyone that she was Lady Whistledown. It had to be the double blackmail theory. What else could it be? He must have uncovered some horrible secret about Cressida. Penelope was almost giddy with delight.
"I thought you were rather good friends with Lady Danbury,"
Violet said to her.
"I am,"
Penelope replied, trying to act perplexed.
"This is very curious,"
Hyacinth said, tapping her index finger against her cheek.
"Very curious indeed."
"Eloise," Daphne suddenly put in, "you're very quiet tonight."
"Except for when she called me mad,"
Hyacinth pointed out. Eloise had been staring off into space, or perhaps at something behind Daphne and Simon, and hadn't been paying attention.
"Oh, well, nothing to say, I suppose."
"You?" Daphne asked doubtfully.
"Precisely what I was thinking,"
Hyacinth said. Penelope agreed with Hyacinth, but she decided to keep that to herself. It wasn't like Eloise not to weigh in with an opinion, especially not on a night like this, which was growing more and more shrouded with mystery as each second passed.
"You all were saying everything so well," Eloise said. "What could I have possibly added to the conversation?"
Which struck Penelope as very odd. The sly sarcasm was in character, but Eloise always thought she had something to add to a conversation. Eloise just shrugged.
"We should be moving along," Violet said. "We're beginning to hold up your other guests."
"I shall see you later,"
Daphne promised.
"And, oh,"
everyone leaned in,
"you will probably want to know," she whispered, "that Lady Danbury is not here yet."
"Simplifies my job,"
Simon said, looking a bit weary of all the intrigue.
"Not mine,"
Hyacinth said.
"I still have to stick to her.
Like glue."
They all, including Penelope, finished for her.
"Well, I do,"
Hyacinth said.
"Speaking of glue,"
Eloise said as they stepped away from Daphne and Simon.
"Penelope, do you think you can make do with only two batches for a bit? I should like to step out for a moment." "I will go with you,"
Hyacinth announced.
"You can't both go," Violet said. "I'm certain Colin didn't want Penelope left with only me."
"May I go when she's back, then?"
Hyacinth grimaced.
"It's not something I can avoid."
Violet turned to Eloise expectantly.
"What?"
Eloise demanded. "I was waiting for you to say the same thing."
"I'm far too dignified,"
Eloise sniffed.
"Oh, please,"
Hyacinth muttered. Violet groaned.
"Are you certain you wish us to remain by your side?"
she asked Penelope.
"I didn't think I had a choice,"
Penelope replied, amused by the interchange.
"Go," Violet said to Eloise. "Just hurry back."
Eloise gave her mother a nod, and then, much to everyone's surprise, she reached forward and gave Penelope a quick hug.
"What was that for?"
Penelope asked with an affectionate smile.
"No reason,"
Eloise replied, her returning grin rather like one of Colin's.
"I just think this is going to be a special night for you."
"You do?" Penelope asked carefully, unsure of what Eloise might have figured out.
"Well, it's obvious something is afoot,"
Eloise said.
"It's not like Colin to act with such secrecy, and I wanted to offer my support." "You'll be back in just a few minutes," Penelope said. "Whatever is going to happen, if indeed anything is going to happen, you're not likely to miss it."
Eloise shrugged.
"It was an impulse. An impulse born from a dozen years of friendship." "Eloise Bridgerton, are you growing sentimental on me?"
"At this late date?"
Eloise said, with a look of mock outrage.
"I think not." "Eloise,"
Hyacinth interrupted,
"will you leave? I can't wait all night."
And with a quick wave, Eloise was off. For the next hour, they just milled about, mingling with the other guests, and moving, Penelope, Violet, and Hyacinth, as one giant being.
"Three heads and six legs have we,"
Penelope remarked, as she walked toward the window, the two Bridgerton women bustling right alongside her.
"I beg your pardon?"
Violet asked.
Did you really want to look out the window?
Hyacinth muttered.
Or were you just testing us? And where is Eloise?
Mostly just testing you, Penelope admitted.
And I'm sure Eloise was detained by some other guest. You know as well as I that there are many people here from whom it is rather difficult to extract oneself from conversation.
Hm, was Hyacinth's reply.
Someone needs to recheck her definition of glue.
Hyacinth, Penelope said, if you need to excuse yourself for a few minutes, please do go ahead. I shall be just fine. She turned to Violet.
You as well. If you need to leave, I promise I shall remain right here in the corner until you return.
Violet looked at her in horror. And break our word to Colin?
Did you actually give him your word?
Penelope asked.
No, but it was implied in his request, I'm sure.
Oh, look! She suddenly exclaimed.
There he is!
Penelope tried to signal discreetly at her husband, but all her attempts at circumspection were drowned out by Hyacinth's vigorous wave and holler of,
Colin!
Violet groaned.
I know,
Hyacinth said unrepentantly.
I must be more ladylike.
If you know it, Violet said, sounding every inch the mother she was, then why don't you do it?
What would be the fun in that?
Good evening, ladies,
Colin said, kissing his mother's hand, before smoothly taking his place beside Penelope and sliding his arm around her waist.
Well?
Hyacinth demanded. Colin merely quirked a brow.
Are you going to tell us?
She persisted.
All in good time, dear sister.
You're a wretched, wretched man,
Hyacinth grumbled.
I say, Colin murmured, looking about, what happened to Eloise?
That's a very good question,
Hyacinth muttered, just as Penelope said.
I'm sure she'll be back soon.
He nodded, not looking terribly interested.
Mother, he said, turning toward Violet, how have you been? You've been sending cryptic notes all over town, Violet demanded. And you want to know how I've been?
He smiled.
Yes.
Violet actually started wagging her finger at him, something she'd forbidden her own children from ever doing in public.
Oh, no, you don't, Colin Bridgerton. You are not going to get out of explaining yourself.
I am your mother. Your mother.
I am aware of the relation, he murmured. You are not going to waltz in here and distract me with a clever phrase and a beguiling smile.
You think my smile is beguiling?
Colin!
But, he acceded, you did make an excellent point.
Violet blinked.
I did?
Yes, about the waltz.
He cocked his head slightly to the side.
I believe I hear one beginning.
I don't hear anything,
Hyacinth said.
Don't you? Pity.
He grabbed Penelope's hand.
Come along, wife. I do believe this is our dance.
But no one is dancing,
Hyacinth ground out. He flashed her a satisfied smile.
They will be.
And then, before anyone had a chance to comment, he'd yanked on Penelope's hand and they were weaving through the crowds.
Didn't you want to waltz?
Penelope asked breathlessly. Right after they'd passed the small orchestra, the members of whom appeared to be taking an extended break.
No, just to escape,
he explained, slipping through a side door and pulling her along with him. A few moments later, they had ascended a narrow staircase and were secreted in some small parlour, their only light the flickering torches that blazed outside the window.
Where are we?
Penelope asked, looking around.
Colin shrugged. I don't know. It seemed as good a place as any.
Are you going to tell me what is going on?
No. First, I'm going to kiss you.
And before she had a chance to respond to that, not that she would have protested, his lips found hers in a kiss that was hungry and urgent and tender all in one.
Colin,
she gasped, in that split second when he took a breath.
Not now,
he murmured, kissing her again.
But
this was muffled,
lost against his lips. It was the sort of kiss that enveloped her, from her head to her toes, from the way his teeth nibbled her lips, to his hands squeezing her bottom and sliding across her back. It was the sort of kiss that could easily have turned her knees to water and led her to swoon on the sofa and allow him to do anything to her, the more wicked the better, even though they were mere yards away from over 500 members of the Ton. Except...
"Colin!"
she exclaimed, somehow breaking her mouth free of his.
"Shh! Colin, you have to stop!"
He looked like a lost puppy.
"Must I?"
"Yes, you must."
"I suppose you're going to say it's because of all the people just next door."
"No, although that's a very good reason to consider restraint."
"To consider and then reject, perhaps?"
he asked hopefully.
"No, Colin."
She pulled herself from his arms and moved several feet away, lest his nearness tempt her into forgetting herself.
"Colin, you need to tell me what is going on."
"Well," he said slowly, "I was kissing you."
"That's not what I meant, and you know it."
"Very well."
He walked away, his footsteps echoing loudly in her ears. When he turned back around, his expression had turned deadly serious.
"I have decided what to do about Cressida."
"You have? What? Tell me."
His face took on a slightly pained expression.
"Actually, I think it might be best if I didn't tell you until the plan is underway."
She stared at him in disbelief.
"You're not serious."
"Well..."
He was looking longingly at the door, clearly hoping for an escape.
"Tell me,"
she insisted.
"Very well."
He sighed, then sighed again.
"Colin!"
"I'm going to make an announcement,"
he said, as if that would explain everything. At first, she said nothing, thinking that maybe it would all become clear if she just waited a moment and thought about it. But that didn't work, and so she asked, her words slow and careful,
"What sort of announcement?"
His face turned resolute.
"I'm going to tell the truth."
She gasped.
"About me?"
He nodded.
"But you can't."
"Penelope, I think it's best."
Panic began to rise within her, and her lungs felt impossibly tight.
"No, Colin, you can't. You can't do that. It's not your secret to reveal."
"Do you want to pay Cressida for the rest of your life?"
"No, of course not. But I can ask Lady Danbury."
"You're not going to ask Lady Danbury to lie on your behalf," he snapped. "That's beneath you, and you know it."
Penelope gasped at his sharp tone. But deep down, she knew he was right.
"If you were so willing to allow someone else to usurp your identity," he said, "then you should have just allowed Cressida to do it."
"I couldn't,"
she whispered.
"Not her."
"Fine. Then it's time we both stood up and faced the music."
"Colin,"
she whispered,
"I'll be ruined."
He shrugged.
"We'll move to the country."
She shook her head, desperately trying to find the right words. He took her hands in his.
"Does it really matter so much?"
he said softly.
"Penelope, I love you. As long as we're together, we'll be happy."
"It's not that,"
she said, trying to tug her hand from his so that she could wipe the tears from her eyes. But he wouldn't let go.
"What then?"
he asked.
"Colin, you'll be ruined too,"
she whispered.
"I don't mind."
She stared at him in disbelief. He sounded so flip, so casual about something that would change his entire life, alter it in ways he couldn't possibly imagine.
"Penelope,"
he said, his voice so reasonable she could barely stand it,
"it's the only solution. Either we tell the world or Cressida does."
"We could pay her,"
she whispered.
"Is that what you really want to do?"
he asked.
"Give her all the money you've worked so hard to earn? You might as well have just let her tell the world she was Lady Whistledown."
"I can't let you do this,"
she said.
I don't think you understand what it means to be outside of society.
And you do, he countered.
Better than